Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, number 19, Preacher's Massacre. By William W. Johnstone with J.A. Johnstone. Narrated by Mort Shelby. With performances by Mort Shelby, Eric Mesner, Thomas Keegan, Kimberly Gilbert, James Keegan, Jonathan Watkins, Michael John Casey, David Harris, Richard Rowan, Michael Glenn, James Lewis, Scott McCormick, Terrence Aselford, David Coyne, Joe Brack, Nathaniel Perry, Danny Gavigan, Bradley Smith, and Patrick Stratton. Springtime in the Rocky Mountains is mighty pretty. As the sun came up, Preacher went down to the creek to get some water for coffee. Coming back to the campfire, he twisted and bent down to fill the coffee pot. Suddenly, an arrow came flying out of the trees, slicing a little gash in the side of his neck as it went past him.
Damn!
If he hadn't bent down to fill the coffee pot at just the right time, the arrow would have buried itself between his shoulder blades. He launched into a dive that carried him behind a fallen tree at the edge of the stream. More arrows sailed through the air above him. Others slammed into the log. He got a good enough look at him to tell that they were Blackfoot arrows.
So much for talking my way out of this one.
The Blackfoot hated Preacher with a special passion way stronger than any of the other tribes. Yep, springtime in the Rocky Mountains was mighty pretty, but not so much so when some varmints were trying to kill you. It was hard to appreciate the beauty of nature stretched out behind a log with a handful of bloodthirsty savages closing in. Normally, Preacher would have tucked a couple of flintlock pistols behind the broad leather belt cinched around his waist, but he hadn't put on his belt yet.
You're getting old, Preacher. You're gonna have to be mighty lucky to keep on getting any older. I wish to hell I could get to those pistols.
All four of them were double shots and heavily charged, and would cut a wide, bloody swath through the warriors. Preacher looked around, taking stock of his situation. He had his hunting knife and a sheath strapped to his right calf. He had the coffee pot, which was heavy enough to serve as a bludgeon. A couple of feet away lay a fairly thick, broken branch. If it wasn't too rotten, it might make a decent club. He knew at least three enemies lurked in the trees and brush. He'd seen arrows flying from that many locations at the same time, which proved it wasn't an actual Blackfoot war party that had attacked him. But the warriors might be scouts from a larger group, so there could be more. One of them might have gone back to fetch the others already. If he was gonna fight his way out, he had to draw him closer. And that wasn't likely to happen unless they thought he was dead. He'd have to try something pretty risky. Moving fast, he pushed himself halfway to his feet, as if he were about to make a run for it. Preacher twisted out of the way of a couple of the arrows, but the third raked him along his side.
Oh!
And that was just what he wanted. He flopped gracelessly to the ground behind the log, landing on his back with the arrow between his arm and his body, where he had clamped his arm down on it. The shaft stuck straight up in the air as if the arrow had gone all the way through him. Preacher lay absolutely motionless. Time dragged by. Blackfoot warriors were no fools. They watched carefully, wary of a trick. But they were also curious and eager to take the scalp of the notorious mountain man who was responsible for the deaths of so many of their fellows. Horse wasn't happy. If he'd caught scent of the warriors earlier, he would have given Preacher some warning. But the lurkers had skillfully avoided getting upwind of the camp. dog, the big wolf-like cur who was Preacher's other longtime trail companion, was off hunting somewhere. He'd be back, but maybe not in time to help. It was all up to him. The sun climbed above the trees and began to shine down in his face. He closed his eyes against the glare, and more time crawled by.
Come on, damn it. What are you going to do, let me lie here all day before you come to lift my hair?
He felt a shadow over his eyes. Surprised, something had moved between him and the light. He hadn't heard any footsteps. Just like him, the Blackfoot could move mighty quiet when they wanted to. His eyes flew open just as one of the warriors stepped over the log, knife in hand to cut Preacher's scalp away from his head.
Oh!
Preacher snatched the arrow from between his arm and body and rammed the sharp flint head as hard as he could into the warrior's groin. The man dropped his knife and Preacher snatched it out of midair and rolled to the side. His arm drew back and snapped forward. The knife flashed through the air and caught one of the warriors hanging back a few yards in the throat. Preacher grabbed up the coffee pot and hurtled the log as the third warrior was trying to knock an arrow to his bow. The Blackfoot threw the bow and arrow aside. Knowing Preacher was too close, he grabbed for the tomahawk at his waist. The move came too late. Preacher dropped the pot and grabbed the warrior's tomahawk, just in case either of the other Blackfoot was still alive. He quickly saw that precaution wasn't necessary. Both men had bled to death from the wounds he'd inflicted on them. Somehow, he was still alive, with nothing to show from the encounter except a couple of scratches that didn't amount to anything.
Whew! Horse, I reckon you're looking at the luckiest son of a gun on the face of the earth.
But a strong possibility still existed that a Blackfoot war party was in the area. Preacher needed to clear out, get higher up in the mountains, find a place where he could ford up. If the three dead men were indeed scouts for a larger group, one thing he could count on was that the men in the war party would come looking for him as soon as they discovered the corpses. And Preacher did not want to be found. Soon he had his gear packed up and was just tightening the cinch on Horse's saddle when Dog came bounding into the clearing beside the creek.
Oh, now you show up. You know, I could have used a paw a little while ago. No, I ain't mad at you. We got to pull out though, and we can't waste any time doing it.
Tall pines covered the steep slopes higher up. In the valleys where he was, aspen, juniper, and birch lined the creeks. Wildflowers bloomed in some of the meadows. He liked nothing in the world better than being in these mountains, which was why he always returned to him when life took him to other places for a while. They were the only real home he had ever known. Even when he'd been a kid, living on his folks' farm back east, he hadn't felt like he belonged there. He'd left as soon as he could, setting out to see the elephant, as the old-timer said. And he had seen the elephant all right. Seen it, and then some. A smaller creek flowed into the stream he'd been following. He turned horse and sent the stallion walking upstream. Within a few hundred yards, the creek bed began to rise and soon became too rocky and steep for horse. Preacher dismounted and all three rested for a few minutes. Then, holding horse's reins, he led the stallion up the slope with the waters of the creek down alongside him. Dog bounded ahead to lead the way through the brush. An hour of walking lifted him a long way above the valley where Preacher had encountered the Blackfoot. The view was spectacular from the spot where Preacher paused to rest again. Mountains and valleys fell away all around him. He could see so far the distance became hazy, even to his eagle-keen eyes. He didn't spend a lot of time taking in the scenery, though. He searched the landscape below for any sign of pursuit. At first, it appeared there wasn't any, but then he spotted a flash of motion and color.
Might have been a bird, and it might have been a face painted for war.
He concentrated on the area. A few moments later, sunlight winked on something metal.
A rifle barrel or a knife. Definitely not a bird. Let's go. They're down there looking for us.
Preacher used the trees for cover as much as possible. They reached a spot where the creek had carved a narrow canyon into the rock, forming a pass of sorts on the side of the mountain. It looked wide enough for Preacher to get through with the stallion. He was worried about being spotted while they crossed a short stretch of open rocky ground to reach it, but the canyon was the best route he could see away from the war party. 100 yards in, it grew narrower. If it came to a dead end at a waterfall, he and his two friends might be trapped in there. But if that turned out to be the case, within the cramped confines of the canyon, the Blackfoot could only come at him one or two at a time. He'd have his pistols and his rifle ready, and he would take them on until he ran out of powder and shot, and then he'd meet them with knife and tomahawk.
They may kill me in the end. They are going to pay one hell of a price for it.
He pressed on. After a mile or so, the rock walls so close they scraped on horses' flanks, and the sky just a thin ribbon of blue overhead. The canyon opened out again into several valleys branching off through the mountains. To Preacher's left was a small pool. Water trickled down an almost sheer cliff and gathered there before forming the creek he'd been following. It was a good place to stop for a while. He hunkered down on his haunches next to the pool and made a late lunch on jerky and pemmican he took from a pouch tied to his saddle. After he had eaten and rested, he found a game trail that curled around the shoulder of the mountain, and he followed it to a ledge where pronghorn antelope grazed. They bounded away at the sight of him. At the base of a granite cliff, he found several giant slabs of rock that had sheared off and slid down the mountain sometime during the last centuries. They leaned against the cliff, forming a cave-like area. It was big enough for him and his two companions. He led horse into the shelter, and dog wasn't far behind. The sun was low by the time he unsaddled horse. It had been a long day, starting early with that fight with the Blackfoot, and he pushed himself and his friends pretty hard. They'd climbed high, and it was quite cool at that altitude. And once the sun went down, the night got downright chilly. He built a fire right up against the leaning rock so its face would reflect the heat. Once it burned down, the embers ought to keep them fairly warm the whole night. After another skimpy meal, he spread his bedroll and crawled into his blankets. All four pistols and his rifle were loaded and close beside him. He hoped he wouldn't need them. He'd put a lot of distance between himself and the three dead warriors, and had used every trick he knew to cover his tracks. All he could do was hope it had been enough. Preacher didn't fall asleep right away. It was very dark behind the rocks, but bits of starlight filtered in around them. Dog lay against him on the side away from the guns. His thoughts strayed back over the past few months. Preacher and three of his friends had spent the winter with a Dutch trader named Horst Groenwald, who was better known in the mountains as Blind Pete, even though he wasn't blind. Pete's trading post had been burned down by some of Preacher's enemies, now deceased, so it only seemed fair that Preacher help him rebuild it. And that was what he'd done, with assistance from Audie, Nighthawk, and Lorenzo. The diminutive Audie and the taciturn Nighthawk were old friends who had shared many a camp with Preacher. The black man, Lorenzo, had come west from St. Louis with Preacher after helping him settle a score back there. They were all boon companions, as the storybooks phrase it. But once the weather had turned nicer, Audie and Nighthawk had set out to do some trapping on their own, and Lorenzo had decided to remain at the trading post with Pete, who was glad to have the help. Lorenzo's rheumatism was getting worse, and he wasn't getting any younger. He invited Preacher to come around anytime while he was gathering beaver pelts. Sometime while he was remembering the winter he had spent with his friends, he dozed off. Preacher awoke instantly when Dog growled. The gray light inside the shelter of the rocks meant the dawn was approaching.
Blackfoot.
Preacher pushed the blankets aside, then rolled over onto his belly and picked up the rifle. Crawling over to a tiny crack between the rocks a few feet away, he put his eye to the gap. His field of vision was narrow, but he was able to see several warriors on horseback riding through the newly green grass about 70 yards away. Preacher recognized the leader of the small band.
Red Knife.
A couple of the passing riders glanced toward the rocks where Preacher, Horse, and Dog were hidden, but they looked away again without showing any interest. They couldn't tell the little pocket was behind the massive stone slabs. They rode on to the far end of the ledge, turned around, and circled back.
Easy, old son. Easy.
By the time the sun peeked over the horizon, the Indians were gone.
All right, Dog. We're going to squat right here for a day or two and give those heathens time to leave this part of the country. Then we'll work our way north and find some good trapping country.
That sounded like a fine plan to him. And it probably would have been if he hadn't seen the dust cloud a couple of days later as he was getting ready to leave the hideout among the boulders. But there it was, too small and moving too steadily to be caused by a buffalo stampede, but big enough to tell it came from a large group of horses or some other animals. He was curious, since that was his nature, but more than that, he knew if he could spot the dust cloud, so could somebody else, namely Red Knife, if the Blackfoot War Party was still around. So he headed east out of the mountains, down onto the plains. After resting for a couple of days, Horse was more than happy to stretch his legs. Preacher let the big stallion run. He knew he was kicking up dust of his own that might draw attention. But if it was a party of white men up ahead, he wanted to warn them about Red Knife prowling around, looking for trouble. The problem with being able to see a long ways off was that it always took longer than it seemed like to reach a destination. Preacher had covered several miles when he reined horseback to a walk. The dust cloud looked like it was still as far away as it had been when he'd started.
Take it easy. I'll let you run again in a little while.
They kept going, angling northeast to intercept whatever was raising that dust cloud. With tireless energy, Dog bounded ahead and then came back again and again. Preacher heeled Horse into a faster gait. Gradually, they drew closer to their goal. Then, the dust cloud stopped moving. Preacher frowned and reined in.
Whoever's up there runs smack dab into trouble, and I'm betting that trouble's named Red Knife. I reckon we better go see what this is all about. Come on.
Despite the way it looks from a distance, the prairie isn't completely flat. Ridges and gullies crisscross it, and sometimes the land swells upward into something that could almost be called a hill. Preacher spotted one of those grassy mounds and used it to cover his approach. Reaching the slope, he swung down from the saddle and dropped the reins, letting them hang loose. Horse wouldn't go anywhere. with the flintlock rifle in his hands and Dog beside him. Preacher hurried up the rise. Before he reached the top, he dropped to hands and knees and took off the wide-brimmed felt hat he wore. He crawled higher, belly down, and stuck his head up just far enough to take a gander at the scene playing out before him. Dog lay beside him.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I don't like the looks of it either.
About 200 yards away, three canvas-covered wagons drawn by mule teams had come to a halt. What appeared to be a dozen or so men were using the wagons for cover as they fired at three times that many Blackfoot warriors on horseback racing around the embattled vehicles. On the far side of the wagons was an entire herd of horses, 50 or 60 of them, Preacher judged, maybe more. They'd been driven up into a little draw and were being held there by several riders who divided their attention between keeping the horses penned up and fighting back against the Blackfoot. As Preacher watched, one of those men grabbed his shoulder and toppled off his mount. The man rolled over and came up to his feet again. He broke into a shaky run as one of the Blackfoot charged after him. Preacher brought his rifle to his shoulder. A second later, the warrior who'd been giving chase to the fallen white man threw his arms up and pitched from the back of his pony as the back of his head flew apart. Preacher reloaded. With all the shooting already going on, the defenders at the wagon all had rifles, and so did some of the attacking Blackfoot. Preacher doubted anybody would notice right away that he was firing from the top of the rise. He drew another bead. The Blackfoot weren't exactly skilled riders. Being more at home in the mountains, they hadn't adapted to the use of horses as well as some of the other tribes that spent most of their time on the plains. But they could stay mounted when they wanted to, having learned that horses gave their raiding and hunting parties more range. They probably wanted that herd for their own use, and they wanted to kill the white men who had driven the horses out here because they were white. Blackfoot didn't need any more reason than that. Preacher aimed again. He knew that sooner or later the other warriors would realize they were being cut down by somebody who was not quartered up inside the wagons. Unlike a herd of buffalo, the Blackfoot would not just go on about their business unaware they were being slaughtered. Sure enough, several of the Blackfoot had spotted the spurts of powder smoke from Preacher's rifle muzzle, and they broke off from the others, galloping toward the rise. Preacher calmly finished reloading, then socketed the rifle butt against his shoulder. The Blackfoot flew backward off his pony, but they were covering the ground too fast for him to reload the rifle. He set it aside and waited in the tall grass until the Indians were closer. Then he reared up, pulling the two loaded pistols from his belt. Blood fountain from a warrior's throat as a pistol ball ripped through it. One of the horses went down, crushing its rider beneath it. The fourth and final warrior in the charge yanked his horse to a stop and let fly with an arrow. The Blackfoot didn't get a chance to try again because a gray streak flew through the air and crashed into him.
Come on, Dog.
Preacher dropped to one knee at the top of the rise. He picked up the rifle and began reloading again. He turned to the cur and smiled.
Good job.
Down below, the Blackfoot broke off their attack. Between Preacher's efforts and those of the men in the wagons, they were taking too many casualties. White men had been coming regularly to the frontier for less than 40 years, but the Indians had already figured out they were vastly outnumbered. No matter how many whites they killed, there were always more to take their place. Because of that, resources, including warriors, had to be used carefully. The price paid for victory in battle couldn't be too high, or that victory would actually be a defeat. Anytime a fight wasn't going as well as hoped, it made more sense to abandon it and fight again another day. It wasn't a blind retreat, however. The Blackfoot intended to flee right over Preacher and kill him in the process. Preacher lifted the rifle. The men in the wagons weren't finished either. A Blackfoot pony went down. The warrior leading the charge, close enough for Preacher to see the designs daubed in red paint on his face, waved an arm and veered his horse. The rest broke off the charge and turned sharply, angling into a swale between a couple of ridges. Preacher watched them go while he reloaded the rifle yet again. Setting the flintlock aside, he reloaded both pistols. Then he crossed his arms and shoved the guns behind his belt, butts forward. He picked up his hat and rifle.
Come on, dog.
Preacher mounted and rode around the rise, keeping an eye on the place where the Blackfoot had fled, just in case they decided to double back and try again. He headed slowly for the wagons. As he came closer, he saw that several of the mules were down, skewered by arrows. Only a few Blackfoot warriors had been armed with rifles claimed from victims of previous raids. Most of them had been using bows and arrows. Preacher saw men moving around the wagons. Some unhitched the dead mules while others stood facing outward, vigilantly holding rifles. One of the guards waved an arm over his head as Preacher approached, making a circling motion to let him know it was all right to ride on in. The man lowered his arm and strode forward, meeting Preacher about 50 yards from the wagon.
Hello! Well, you showed up just in time, friend. I assume that was you taking those pot shots from the top of the hill?
Yeah, it was.
Well, you turned the tide for us. I don't have any doubt about that. Come on. We've got coffee and food, and we're more than willing to share.
Preacher dismounted, and the man extended a hand.
My name's Wiley Cortland.
Wiley was a medium-sized man, a couple of inches shorter than Preacher, but probably weighing just about as much. Hatless and clean-shaven, he wore high-topped brown boots, whipcord trousers, a linsey woolsey shirt, and a brown leather vest. He was fair-skinned and a little sunburned. His hair was so pale it was almost white, even though he was only around 30 years old. The mountain man shook hands with him.
They call me Preacher.
Is that because you're a minister?
Not hardly. Some would say I'm pretty much a heathen, but I like to think me and the good Lord are still on speaking terms. It's just that the nearest church is more than 500 miles away, and, well, I never was much for being cooped inside anyway.
Where would you find a more spectacular tabernacle than this?
You're in pretty good spirits for a fellow who was in danger of losing his hair just a few minutes ago.
Yes, but the danger's over now. The savages are gone. We lost some mules, but no men or horses. I'd say we were lucky.
Mighty lucky.
They walked toward the wagons.
What are you and your pards doing out here?
Driving that horse herd to Fort Gifford, of course.
Where's that?
It's a new trading post established by the American Fur Company, about 50 miles west of Fort Union on the Missouri River.
And you're in charge of this bunch?
That's right. It was my idea to put the horse herd together and bring it out here. I financed the expedition, too. I don't mind telling you, it took just about everything I had. But I expect to reap some handsome profits once we get to Fort Gifford.
How you figure?
I'm going to trade some of the horses directly to the Indians for pelts. The others I plan to sell to fur trappers who are in need of mounts.
Well, you just might come out ahead that way.
As the two of them walked up to the lead wagon, one of the men approached them.
We got four men wounded, Wiley, but only one of them is pretty bad. I think he'll live once we get the arrow out of him.
That's good. Preacher, this is my second in command, Otis Freeman. Otis, meet the fellow who pitched in to help us. He says he's called Preacher. You didn't explain why they call you that if you're not a minister.
Oh, it's a long story. Howdy, Freeman.
Cortland's lieutenant was a tall, heavy-shouldered man with a mournful face. Calling him plain would have been generous. His appearance bordered on ugly.
Preacher, eh? I think I've heard of you. You're famous among the mountain men. Supposed to be as wild and dangerous as a ring-tailed wampus cat.
You know, the wampus cat might not take kindly to being compared to me. You say you got a man with an arrow in him?
That's right. You know anything about tending to wounds like that?
Well, I patched up a few of them. I'll be glad to take a look at the fellow if you'd like.
That's mighty generous of you, Preacher. Otis, show him where the wounded man is.
Right back here on this tailgate.
Preacher looped horse's reins around one of the spokes and a rear wheel on the lead wagon.
Doug, stay.
He walked with Freeman back to the spot where the injured man had been placed. The man lay on his left side on the second wagon's lowered tailgate. The right side of his shirt was red with blood. Not surprisingly, the color had drained from his face, which was covered with beads of sweat. He was conscious, but he looked pretty groggy. A few men stood around him, grim-faced.
If some of you will hold him down now, I'll get a good grip on that shaft and see if I can pull it out of him.
Now hang on, I thought you were going to let me take a look at it first.
Well, sure, if you want, but you can tell by looking at him, he's in a lot of pain.
Yeah, he'll be in a lot more pain if you pull that arrow straight out of him. It'll rip a hole in him big enough to put a fist through. He'd likely bleed to death before he could stop it.
What do you think we should do, then?
Preacher leaned closer to study the wound. The man's shirt had been ripped back to reveal the place where the arrow entered his body. It was low on his right side, a couple of inches above his waist. Judging by the angle of the shaft, the arrow hadn't penetrated too deeply. The head was probably no more than 3 inches under the man's skin. Preacher laid a hand on the man's back and prodded with his fingertips.
What we need to do is push it on through.
If you push it on through, won't that just hurt him more?
Oh, it's gonna hurt like blazes, but it'll do a lot less damage, too. If you fellas will hang on to him, I'll be glad to show you.
All right, go ahead. You heard the man, fellas. Let's get a good hold on Ben here.
Several of the other men laid hands on him.
What are you...
Don't you worry about a thing, son. We're gonna have you fixed up in no time.
You swear?
Oh, of course I swear. Well, I've doctored fellas who are a heap worse off than you. You know, one of them I got back in such good shape, he spent the winter with some Injuns I know. He didn't have just one squaw to keep his buffalo robes warm either. He had three.
Three women?
Yeah, you bet.
While Preacher was talking, he had taken hold of the arrow shaft and had a firm grip on it. When the wounded man's eyes widened at the thought of sharing his blankets with three women, Preacher suddenly gave the arrow a hard push. Preacher pushed the arrow through far enough to get a hold of the shaft with both hands just behind the head and snap it off. Then it was simple to pull the shaft back out through the hole it had made going in.
Now we need to pour whiskey all the way through that hole. It'll need to be drenched good.
Seems like a waste of perfectly good whiskey.
It's best way to keep the wound from festering.
Preacher wiped off the blood on his hands on his buckskins and stepped back away from the wagon.
Once you got the wound clean, you're gonna need to bandage it. Later I'll make a poultice and we'll put it on the holes to draw out any corruption.
Frontier surgery at its finest.
Oh, I wouldn't call that surgery. Nothing fancy about it.
Medical attention doesn't have to be fancy, just effective. I was watching you, Preacher, and I'm more convinced than ever that my first impulse about you was right.
What impulse might that be?
I want you to come to Fort Gifford with us.
Oh, now, why would you want me to do that?
Well, just look at what you did for poor Ben there. I don't know the best way to treat such an injury. None of us did. We might have done more harm than good, and he might have died if you hadn't come along. For that matter, all of us might have died when those Indians attacked us, if not for you, Preacher.
Look, you're giving me way too much credit.
No, I don't think so. How many of the savages did you kill?
Well, 7 or 8, I reckon.
That's more than all of us killed, even though we were shooting as fast as we could. The Indians probably wouldn't have broken off their attack when they did if you hadn't inflicted so much damage on them.
I'm a fur trapper, not a horse herder.
I wouldn't expect you to herd any horses. You'd be our guide and scout and surgeon, not to mention expert marksman. My plan was to engage the services of just such a person when we got out here, but so far we haven't run into anyone who fits the bill. Until you. How long do you think it would take us to get to the fort?
Well, since I don't know exactly where it is, that's a mite hard to say. But from what you told me earlier, I don't reckon it'd take much more than a week.
So there you are. A week's work on your part, and a healthy share in the profits I realized from the horses. You see, Preacher, I wasn't expecting you to accompany us out of the goodness of your heart. You'd be a partner in this enterprise.
I've never been what you'd call a businessman.
But you've hired on with other expeditions, I'll wager.
That was true. Never just for the money, though. He'd always had other reasons. Usually, the folks he helped out really needed his help.
All right. I reckon the beaver can wait another week or two for me to trap him. I'll come with you.
I'm about as glad to hear that as anything I've ever heard in my life.
One man had been creased by a rifle ball during the fighting, while two more had scratches inflicted by arrows that had narrowly missed doing much worse. Once those minor injuries were tended to, the group was ready to move again. Ben was placed on a pile of blankets in one of the wagons since he was in no shape to ride. Some of what Preacher had taken to be horses were actually extra mules. They were hitched to the wagons in place of the animals that had been killed. When the vehicles rolled out, heading north again, Preacher and Wiley Cortland rode at the head of the little procession. Cortland wore a coonskin cap, complete with a bushy tail and head. Preacher thought it looked a mite ridiculous. He figured somebody back in St. Louis had sold it to Cortland, assuring him every frontiersman worth his salt sported headgear just alike. But in spite of the hat, Preacher had to give Cortland some credit. The backs of the wagons were loaded with plenty of supplies, guns, and ammunition. He'd done a decent job of outfitting for the trip. It appeared the only thing he had failed to do was hire experienced men to come along with him. Now he had Preacher for that. But it remained to be seen whether that would be enough to get the party safely to Fort Gifford.
Is this your first trip west to St. Louis?
That's right. I've always wanted to come west. I owned an interest in a freight line in Missouri, so I know horses and wagons. I finally decided to take the bit between my teeth, so to speak, and sold my part of the company so I could use the money to outfit for the trip out here.
Yeah, I know the feeling about wanting to come west anyway.
Have you been out here a long time?
Well, more than 20 years. I ran away from home when I was still a boy.
That must have been pretty dangerous. And you've survived out here that long, under such hazardous conditions.
Yeah, a fella learns how to get along, what to watch out for. If he doesn't...
Then nature takes care of it, huh? That's true. The world is a harsh, unforgiving place. But I try to keep my spirits up. Doesn't do any good to brood about things, does it?
No, I reckon not. Was there something that decided you to make the move when you did?
It had something to do with a woman.
Ooh, yeah, well, a lot of times it does. I'm sorry if I stirred up bad memories.
Oh, that's fine. I put it behind me. It's all a man can do, really. Preacher, do you think those Indians will come back?
I'd be mighty surprised if they didn't.
Do you know what tribe they were?
Blackfoot.
Those are supposed to be some of the worst Indians, right? The most hostile?
They ain't ever been overly friendly to me. We've had our scrapes. Plenty of them.
And that's why you think they'll attack us again?
Yeah. The ones who jumped you are being led by a war chief called Red Knife. I know for a fact he's been on the prod in these parts because I had a run-in with some of his scouts a few days ago. He ain't gonna like that we made him turn tail and run. He'll be looking to settle that score.
We'd better double our guard at night then. Be on the lookout for trouble.
Well, that'd be smart.
They didn't see any more signs of the war party, and Preacher was grateful. On the other hand, the longer Red Knife delayed attacking him, the longer the war chief would have to build up his forces. The Blackfoot already outnumbered Cortland's party. If Red Knife was able to round up more warriors, the odds might become overwhelming. The horses were picketed when they made camp that evening. Some of the men got tents from the wagons and set them up. Preacher didn't have need of a tent. He'd just spread his bedroll under one of the wagons and he'd be just fine.
Should we have built this fire?
Might as well have. We won't be telling Red Knife anything he don't already know, if that's what you're worried about. I suspect he's had scouts trailing us all day.
Good. My people can use the hot food and coffee.
Tell me, why didn't you just follow the Missouri River with your horses? You're well south of there.
I studied all the maps available and decided we could save some time and distance by following this route.
Now, you know some of those maps likely was drawn by fellas who ain't never been out here, don't you?
But you know the territory. Aren't we headed in the right direction?
If you're right about where this Fort Gifford is, then I reckon you're headed toward it. Anyway, if we keep going north, We'll hit the Big Muddy sooner or later, and the ford will have to be one direction or the other. I reckon we can backtrack if we have to.
The Big Muddy. That's the Missouri?
Yep.
Despite all the hardships you must have suffered, I envy you your adventurous life, Preacher.
Well, there's no need to.
Why's that?
Because by the time we make it to Fort Gifford, you're just liable to get all the adventure you could ever want.
Cortland posted four guards that night instead of the usual two. Preacher would have preferred even more, but the men had to sleep sometime. As far as Preacher, he intended to do some prowling around during the night. He put on his hat and took his rifle with him as he made the rounds of the camp. The guards were posted about 20 yards out at each of the compass points. Everything seemed fine, but his instincts nagged at him. He had learned that when his gut told him something was wrong, it usually was. The feeling grew stronger as he approached the fourth and final guard, the one on the east side of the camp. The man was sitting cross-legged on the ground.
Hey, any problems over here?
The sentry didn't reply. Preacher dropped to one knee next to the man, put a hand on his shoulder, and shook him gently. The man's head tipped far back at a grotesque, unnatural angle. Preacher leaned forward and saw the dark stain on the front of the man's shirt where blood had flooded down. The man's throat was cut down to the bone, giving him the appearance of having a wide, gaping second mouth. Preacher's hand moved to the man's back. A stake had been pushed into the ground behind the guard and through his shirt so it held him up in a sitting position. Whoever had killed him, and Preacher had no doubt it was one of the Blackfoot, hadn't wanted the man's death to be discovered right away. Preacher jerked around and peered toward the wagons.
Damn. More than likely the killers crawled into the camp.
Preacher surged to his feet and broke into a run. It took only a few seconds for his long legs to carry him back into the camp. Men fought clear of their tents, waving pistols around, but nobody really seemed to know what was going on. Confusion reigned, which was a bad thing. Preacher spotted Otis Freeman and grabbed his arm.
Tell everybody to settle down. Get your rifles. Take cover by the wagons. The Blackfoot could be attacking again.
That'd be a good tactic, sending one man in to throw the camp into an outroar, then attacking while everybody was running around like chickens with their heads cut off.
Where's Cortland?
I don't know. His tent's over there.
Even in the dim light, Preacher could tell somebody was thrashing around inside it. He ran over to the tent, thrust his rifle barrel through the opening, and ripped the canvas aside. Wiley Cortland was rolling around on the ground, locked in a deadly struggle with someone. Locked as closely together as the men were, Preacher couldn't risk a shot. But when Cortland rolled over, his attacker was on top momentarily, and Preacher struck, hitting the Blackfoot with his rifle. Cortland shoved the warrior's corpse aside and scrambled away from it. By then, the other men had gathered around.
Spread out, blast it! Bunched up your better target!
Do what he says! Wiley, are you all right?
I think so. Thanks to Preacher. Again.
The men scattered, resuming defensive positions around the wagons. The surviving guards had rushed in to see what all the commotion was about. Preacher did a quick head count and came up with 11, not counting himself. The guard, whose throat had been cut, was the only fatality.
Dog! Hunt!
Dog bounded off into the night, vanishing rapidly in the darkness. Preacher knew he would range all around the camp, searching for enemies. Silence lay over the prairie for a good 20 minutes before Dog came trotting back. The mountain man ruffled the fur on the animal's head.
Good boy. Now, there ain't any more Injuns out there. Not anywhere close to the camp, anyway.
You sure?
If they were there, Dog would have found them. That varmint who snuck in was by himself.
What did he think he was going to accomplish, one man like that?
Well, you'd be surprised. If he'd been slick enough to crawl in here, cut three or four throats, and get back out without anybody knowing until morning he'd been there, that would have played hell with everybody's spirit. Bad enough he managed to kill the guard out yonder on the east side of the camp.
Jenkins? Jenkins is dead?
Yeah. Throat was cut ear to ear. Maybe he dozed off when he should have been watching her. Maybe the fellow was just that good. But it don't really matter now, does it?
No, it doesn't. Poor Jenkins is just as dead either way. Otis, have a couple of men bring in his body. Go with them to guard them.
Sure.
What happened in the tent?
Luckily, I'm a fairly light sleeper. I woke up and sensed something was wrong. Smelled something, maybe.
That could be. That bear grease they use is pretty rank.
When I opened my eyes, I could see just well enough to make out a shape above me. I reacted without even thinking about it, threw myself aside. He was already trying to stab me. The knife went in the ground, I guess. I felt his arm come down right beside my ear. So I grabbed his wrist and hung on for dear life.
That was the right thing to do. You could have hollered for help, though.
I know. I should have. But I was concentrating so hard on keeping him from killing me, I just didn't think of it at the time.
A few minutes later, Freeman and the two men he had taken with him came back with the dead sentry's body. They wrapped it in a blanket and placed it next to one of the wagon wheels.
We'll bury him in the morning, before we get moving again.
Speaking of that, if I'm not back by morning, you fellas head north and I'll catch up to you as soon as I can. You can just leave Horse here. He won't wander off before I get back.
Catch up? What do you mean? Aren't you coming with us?
Oh, yeah. But there's something else I gotta do first.
What's that?
I figured I'd give old Red Knife and his boys a taste of their own medicine.
Cortland spoke to Preacher again a few minutes later, as the mountain man was getting ready to leave.
I don't much like this, Preacher. Won't you just make this fellow Red Knife even more angry if you're able to kill some of his men?
Well, hell, I don't figure it's possible Red Knife could get much more out of sorts with us than he already is. Besides, it ain't really Red Knife I'm trying to spook. It's the warriors who are with him. He's their war chief, and they'll mostly do what he tells them to do. But if enough of them decide it ain't worth it to keep coming after us, they can make him change his mind. It's been known to happen anyway.
But what if you get killed instead?
That's a risk I'm running, all right.
And the rest of us as well. I was counting on your help to get us to Fort Gifford.
If we shake those Blackfoot off our trail, it's going to be a lot easier.
I suppose I can't argue with that. Anyway, you're not the sort of man to be talked out of something once your mind is made up, are you?
If that's your way of saying I'm stubborn as a mule, I reckon you're right about that.
Go! Preacher gave the big cur a good whiff of a piece of buckskin shirt he'd taken from the dead warrior.
Trail!
Dog bounded off into the night. Preacher knew he'd be able to backtrack the Blackfoot without much difficulty. He trotted out of the camp, taking the same direction Dog had. He carried the long-barreled flintlock rifle and had all four pistols tucked behind his belt. He planned to do his killing with the big knife on his calf, but if it came down to a gunfight, he was going to be prepared. From time to time, Dog circled back to make sure Preacher was still following him. With tireless ease, the mountain man's leathery muscles bore him onward, across prairies, up and down rises, and through buffalo wallows. The trail led in a generally eastward direction. The miles fell away under Preacher's high-topped moccasins. The stars wheeled through the ebony sky overhead, and the sliver of moon dipped toward the horizon. Preacher didn't slow down until a faint tang of smoke drifted to his nose. He stopped, went to a knee. Dog padded out of the shadows.
Good job. You brought me right to him.
The fire was a small one, fueled by buffalo droppings, and gave off little smoke. But Preacher could smell it anyway. He was within a few hundred yards of the Blackfoot camp. On hands and knees, he crawled toward it. Eventually, both he and Dog bellied down on the ground. Preacher took off his broad-brimmed hat and left it lying there with his rifle. He would come back to reclaim him when his mission was finished, if he was able to. If he wasn't, it wouldn't really matter what the hell happened to the hat and the gun. He crawled toward the camp. The Blackfoot had stopped for the night in the lee of a grass-covered knoll. Red Knife would have posted guards, just like Wiley Cortland had. The difference was the Blackfoot sentries would be more alert, as well as more dangerous if they discovered him before he was ready to make his move. Preacher stopped and lay absolutely still, with his head lifted just enough for him to see the camp and the tiny red glow of the fire's embers. Slowly, he turned his head from side to side, searching for the guards. He spotted a dark shape off to his left that might be a man.
Stay.
He started crawling toward the shape. Eventually, he was close enough to see the patch of darkness he'd been closing in on was definitely man-shaped. He smelled the bear grease on the guard's hair. Preacher circled so he could take the sentry from behind. When he rose from the grass, he was like the head of a coiled snake coming up to strike. Preacher lowered the body to the ground and withdrew his knife. He wiped the blade on the dead man's shirt to clean it off. Stretched out on his belly again, he crawled toward the men sleeping on the ground near the remains of the fire. They were scattered out some, which made his job easier. During the next hour, three more men died. The ones farthest on the outskirts of the camp. Their desire for a bit of privacy, if that was what had motivated them to separate themselves from their fellas, cost them dearly. It was grim work, the sort of thing that ate at the souls of some men, but Preacher would never lose a minute of sleep over it. Blackfoot warriors lived to kill, and they'd have done the same thing to him without hesitation if they'd had the chance. He didn't want to push his luck, so after the fourth kill, counting the guard, he backed away. Preacher worked his way back to where he'd left Dog. His instincts guided him unerringly to the spot. Dog didn't make any noise, but he did lick Preacher's face in welcome. Preacher grinned in the darkness, happy to be reunited with his old friend, and relieved his foray into the Blackfoot camp had been successful. In the morning, the Indians would have a new, terrifying story to tell about the man they called Ghost Killer. A line of gray was appearing in the sky along the eastern horizon by the time Preacher came trotting up to Wiley Cortland's camp with Dog at his heels. When he got close enough, he knelt down.
Hello, the camp! Hold your fire! It's me, Preacher!
Preacher? Hey, Preacher's back!
Cortland's call roused the whole camp.
I didn't know if we'd ever see you again.
Oh, hell's fire. You didn't have much faith in me, did you?
All the faith in the world. But you have to admit, the odds of you coming back alive from a mission like that were pretty small. You did find the Blackfoot camp, didn't you?
I did. And there are four of them who won't be coming after you. Or anybody else, for that matter.
You killed four Blackfoot? And still were able to fight your way out?
Wasn't any fighting to it. Nobody knew I was there. They're probably just waking up and finding the bodies right about now.
I want to get an early start and put as many miles behind us as we can today.
That's a good idea. I'm hoping that losing four men will convince Red Knife to leave us alone. But I sure wouldn't count on it.
What do you think the chances are that he will?
Oh, I don't know. But whatever they are, there's an even better chance he'll come after us with blood in his eye.